And welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health, awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MAN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today. He's been on the show before, all the way from, we've just literally set up this podcast just now. He's been dying to come on and I'm so looking forward for him to coming on and speaking again, all the way from the US of A. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, thanks for that introduction. My name is Mark. I'm living in Queens, New York. I have been on this podcast once before, and I'm very grateful for a chance to speak out again.
Thank you. And what was we just talking about? We were talking about, because I'm just, for those listeners out there, obviously you can't see me. The listeners, I'm drinking a green smoothie. Spinach, banana and water. And Mark has mentioned his. What was yours?
Yes, you had mentioned about your smoothie and I had happened to just make mine, which was mixed berries and oatmeal and almond milk.
Yes, and smoothies are always they've come to be more popular now. And you know, me being a vegan and stuff, I mean, I've been doing it for years, and now I'm finding that there's more things you can put together. I mean, some people put a lot of things, but I'm trying to keep mine a bit more simple. Yeah, some people pour, right. Sort of, do you know what I mean? They pour loads of ingredients in, you know, all different types of fruits and stuff like that in one smoothie, and I'm trying to keep mine simple. You know, you spoke about yours. Yours is, you said yours is based on, for you, and it's kind of geared for you. Kind of tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, so I had an injury. I'm really big into the gym, and I had a wrist injury that had me out for a couple of months, unfortunately. And for me, sometimes when I'm not exercising, it also impacts my eating, because when I'm exercising and working towards a goal, I feel like I'm sabotaging myself when I eat poorly. But when I'm not exercising, I kind of feel like, well, I'm just going to kind of eat whatever I want and do whatever I want until the time comes for me to start exercising again. And that's what happened. So when I went back to, I have a personal trainer. And when I went back to him after my wrist had kind of healed up for the most part, he was like, we really have to focus in on your nutrition. So one thing was that he was telling me that I have to get to these smoothies because they're a good way to get in your fruits and to get in your fibers.
Yeah. And what was your smoothie, did you say? Yours is...
The one that I'm having in the morning is just like what you were saying. I keep it simple. So I just have a bag of mixed berries, which is blackberries, blueberries, and strawberries. I buy them in the grocery store frozen because I don't know how it is over there, but fruits are very expensive here. So buying fresh fruits for the week is very costly and something that I probably wouldn't be able to keep up with, unfortunately. So yeah, so I buy my mixed berries in the big frozen packs. I put them in the freezer and then I take it out of the freezer in the mornings. I put maybe one cup of that into the blender and also the almond milk and oatmeal, like Quaker oats.
Yeah. So, and then you've obviously then got a smoothie to help you get you through the morning.
Yes. So now that's my breakfast. And as I was telling you before, it's something that fills me. And just like you had said, slow release, it spreads the nutrition throughout my body without making me feel heavy and sluggish.
Yeah, because you said you were used to eating, what was you said you used to eating?
Everything, eggs, pancakes, toast, avocados, not that avocados are bad,
no,
but you know,
combined,
as a combination of everything together, it's too much and not really needed.
Yeah. And It's funny, you know, because the reason why I said to you, the reason why I asked you, what is it that you eat in the morning? It's not to put it on you or to belittle you or anything like that. I laugh because in the UK, I'm not in the UK, but we're this part of the world, it's a combination of when you said eggs, whatever else, and then you said and then you said pancake. And it's funny because we don't put pancakes. In fact, it's kind of cooked differently in the UK, pancakes. I know that now because of vegan stuff, I mean, people are cooking it like the American way, but pancakes are made differently in England than the ones in, they're kind of more flatter, they're not the fluffy ones. And in America, they tend to be made thin. And I think you guys, I remember when I went there and I was like, you know, I sat there and with one of the guy who I was with, the head coach or whatever, and he ordered pancake and was it pancake and bacon or something with maple syrup, and I was thinking, what? Do you know what I mean? I'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a thing there, isn't it? There's a different kind of, obviously different places do different things, you know, cultures do differently. But yeah, and it kind of came separately. It came, bacon was on one plate and then the pancakes was on another plate and they had the maple syrup and eating them all together. I was like, oh, that's a, you know, but obviously what's strange to one person is not to another.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so you said that it's for you to, basically to kind of help you with the weight training and things like that and to help with your body. So would you say then that because we're talking about health and obviously mental health affects that and our health, and I remember you said making a smoothie can be lazy, and I know that. No, even though there's something that's good for us, sometimes we can be too lazy to make it, and you would say the same thing with a smoothie.
I like smoothies. That's what I was saying. I do really love smoothies. I always have. If somebody was to put one in front of me every single day, I would definitely drink it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to having to do that myself, having to get the ingredients and then put everything together and go through the routine, sometimes I'm on and off with that because after a while it just becomes mundane. And also for the morning especially, it requires me to set aside some time for that.
Yeah.
And right now I'm working remotely, so I tend to sleep all the way up to about the time I have to start working. You know, I have to start working 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be sleeping until 7:45, let's say, because I don't have to drive anywhere anymore. So for me to do this smoothie, I'll have to make sure that I'm up maybe 7:15. Not that it takes 30-40 minutes to do, but I have to be up in enough time to be able to actually make the thing and sit down and relax and drink it and everything.
Yeah. I totally get that because I can't remember the last time I made a smoothie in the morning. I tend to make my smoothies in the evening. And that's the reason why.
You put them in the fridge or you just drink them in the evening?
I know, I make them in the evening. I don't make them in the morning. That's one of the reasons why I don't make it in the morning, because there's not enough time. Well, not that it's not enough time. Like you said, we couldn't make time, but it's one of those things where you just want to relax in for a bit until it's really time to go. You don't really want to be jumping up and... You know what I mean? It can be a thing. I know some people do it. They get up at the crack of dawn and make smoothies and they chill out and stuff like that. I just find that a bit... I just couldn't do it, but I just don't do it. I make my smoothies in the evening so I can chill out and relax. And I make a big one so I can put it in 3 or 4 glasses so I can have it maybe over 2 days or, you know, over 2 days rather than having it all at once. So, yeah. So, can you tell them, can you tell the listeners a bit about what work you do?
Well, I am am a wellness and recovery specialist, which is also known as a peer specialist, which basically just means that I am somebody with lived experience, a diagnosis in the mental health system, who has been through the system and now uses a combination of my certification, my education, and that lived experience to help and relate to others and to provide hope for them.
Fantastic. And if you guys want to go back and listen to his Mark's podcast, it was done a few weeks ago, and it shouldn't be hard to find. It's on, obviously, on Apple, Google, Spotify. So just a little plug there. So go and have a listen. It's a fantastic story. The reason why I invited him back on is to just talk about different things, about different parts of experiences in life, and what's the things that he does, and just his kind of, we've kind of got his background and things like that, but just little things that we can take away from, what you guys can take away from some of the things that he does. Right now, right this minute, it is, what date is it? The 21st. And I've just come in. I mean, I wasn't following anything really, but I didn't know it was happening today. This verdict, what can you tell us about what's been happening, or, kind of lead up to this? Tell the listeners who may be listening to it in the future, what's been happening to the lead up to today, in a sense?
Well, I can't say that I was too into it because it was affecting my mental health.
Yeah.
Really, to be closely involved with everything that was going on with the George Floyd case.
Okay.
With Chauvin. But I watched the final day. The final day of testimonies, the defense and the plaintiff and everything, and they showed the video over and over and over again, analyzing every single part of it, analyzing the people on the street, and analyzing if he felt like fearful because the crowd was yelling at him, and analyzing if George Floyd was resisting arrest. And I got really emotionally drawn back into it. Because even though it was something I was thinking about for the past year since it happened, I wasn't actively thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
It was just kind of something in the background, or, people put their hashtags, justice for George. And, I would share things when I see them, but I wasn't really emotionally involved like that.
Yeah.
Until I started watching these testimonies. The testimony of the off-duty firefighter that was there, and the testimony of the guy that was standing there yelling at the officer to get off his neck, the testimony of the chief of the police department, just a lot of different things, and it was very emotional. So, the jury went into deliberation and they came up with the verdict in one night, which is very quick. And a lot of people said, like a lot of people on the news were saying, that usually only happens if it's unanimous and if it's clear cut. And it seems like that was the case here. But for me, even though I knew it was like a clear cut thing based on what we see on the video and based on the testimonies, I know that justice for a black man in America, a lot of times being clear cut isn't enough. There's a lot of killers that have walked free in these same types of situations. So I think we were all here. I know, especially here in New York, like a lot of us here were on pins and needles still. We don't know for sure if what's going to happen, if he's going to get charged on all three counts, if there's going to be some kind of loophole or something that gets him out of it. So everyone was worried. And then they said, we're going to announce this jury decision 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. So between 4:30 p.m. and 5 Eastern time. And I don't know, I can't recall another time that I have been watching the clock like that for something like this. normally... you'll see it on the news when you see it. Yeah. You're not weeping for it like that. And wow, it was, for me, it was very emotional when they were reading the counts and he got guilty on all three counts. It was a combination of kind of shock in a way, relief, maybe a little bit of joy, and then of some kind of worry, like what's going to happen next.
Don't you think, I'm just listening to you there, and I don't know what it's like. I know as a black man what it's like to face racism. But as a black man, I'm living in a completely different country, which doesn't have the history of America, and it has a history, but it doesn't have the history of America with, it's a big place, you know, it's a completely different, like, culture or whatever. Now, listen to you there, it's some of the words you brought up were, I don't know, or maybe worried, or, and isn't it strange that you'd have to use those words to describe something that would be clear cut? Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, yeah. I actually had a conversation with a friend about that last night, you know, after the verdict came down. And it was like, it's really sad to actually be in a position where you see what's right clearly in front of you. It was recorded. There were so many people standing around. There were so many witnesses, and there's the police body cam footage, there's the cell phone footage, there's even police officers, like, this was an excessive use of force and unnecessary. And you still are like, it's not a matter of is it right or wrong, or was a wrong committed here, or it was this legal? Like, we know that this was not legal, but we're still worried because of him being a black man, if they're going to find a way to sweep it under the rug. Because we've seen so many of these situations before.
Yeah. And this was, I mean, there's been many, I mean, you know, there's been, even now, in the last week or last day, things have happened in the last week or days. And there's been many in the past. And because this was such a high profile case, and we've now got actual, I mean, yes, they had the Rodney King thing years ago, where it could be blatantly, it was seen again, that was footage. But this one was even more high profile because there was more people around, there's more cameras around, there's now body cams on the police, you know, you can hear them talking and things like that. So do you think that even now we're still not at the state, because like you just said, if you look at the two cases, let's just say look at the two things that happened, the Rodney King thing and this one, and there's been more in between. Those would say, you would say, the two most high profile ones so far. Now, doesn't it sound strange that even though years apart, with more technology now, I think people are still worried about justice because being black?
Yes, I mean, definitely, because when I saw this George Floyd video, to be honest, I've seen so many of them before.
Yeah.
Like, these things have become so normalized. People just send them to us, or we see them on World Star Hip Hop, or, you know, they're just shared around daily, all the time. So somebody sent it to me. I open it up like, oh, what's this? I'm watching the video. You know, they're telling him to get in the car. He's saying whatever he's saying. And then they're trying to push him in the car. Then they have him on the sidewalk. I'm just watching it, and it's making me upset. But then I just closed the video and just, you know, went about my day. I'm like, oh, another one. I mean, like, not that I didn't care, but I was just like, well, they're probably going to say he had drugs on him or something, or there was some kind of reason that they were fearful of him. And the police are probably going to get suspended or something, and then they're gonna get off and just leave the police force and get a payout or something and just not be police anymore. Because that's what we're familiar with seeing. So I didn't think that it was any kind of big national big deal like what it became. And then I start to see these protests, and I'm still thinking the same thing. I'm like, I remember the protests for Trayvon Martin. I remember the protests for like Mike Brown.
Yeah, Mike Brown,
yeah. Yeah, like a lot of these different guys. I remember a lot of that. And I'm like, we do this all the time and nothing ever happens. So this is probably no different. But then because of the pandemic, and I think people being home and everyone being tuned in, and a lot of people just being upset, frustrated, and tired of everything going on, the numbers were bigger in terms of the protests, and the things that they were doing were significantly more violent and just larger scale.
Yeah, yeah. It was a shock, because it was. What shocked me was the fact that it went around the world. So I was seeing protests in, you know, I saw in Holland and Japan about police brutality and things like that. You know, all these things that were ramped about, you know, however it kind of curtailed or however it went forward, you know, media or whatever, it obviously took on a massive narrative. I would say to you, because I can hear your pain, I can hear it, and I can hear this that's happened again, okay, right, let me just get on my daily life. Do you know what I mean? It's almost become, like you said, normalised, and it's become, how, as a black man, living in America and see, you know, because things affect our mental health, things affect us, you know, men, women, or whatever, different, black, white, whatever, indifference, things happen to us on a daily basis that affect us. So we make, like I said before, I could drop this glass right now and I go, oh no, do you know what I mean? You know, like when you're a kid and you've got the last bit of ice cream and it falls on the floor and you cry, you know what I mean, or whatever, you go, oh no, and you, things like that, you can break the glass, you can, and it affects the way your mood net later on. Now things affect us, you know, like you said, the injury affected you to the point where, you know, it could help you, you know, it could hinder the way that you do exercise or your weight, and then that can affect your mood or whatever it may be. Then you're drinking smoothies, and then, you know, all these things, there's a catalogue. Now for you, as a black man living and a young boy growing up and hearing these things, because it must affect mentally black people, these things that are happening in America, kind of give us a... I mean, I spoke to somebody on the podcast the other day and she was saying that, look, we're tired because the reason why we protest is because we're angry, because it happens all the time. And something fuels the anger, and then it becomes this. And so you kind of give us kind of like a snapshot of what it feels like to be a black man in America.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking that as you were getting into your question. Something that is not really acknowledged is the fact that racism and oppression affects mental health. It's, I don't know why nobody really talks about that or thinks about it, but that is the case for a lot of black people. Like, a lot of black people have extra added mental health issues due to the things that they're facing out in the world. And it definitely impacts me. I have never obviously had a situation as serious as a George Floyd situation, or a time where I was handcuffed or you know, put in the back of a squad car or anything like that. But I definitely had situations where I did nothing and I was pulled over, questioned, provoked. I've had situations where in a work setting, my advancement was not based on my performance. There were people who were just of a certain culture that got pushed ahead of me. And all these things have been upsetting for me, but never things that I ever talked about. So really, I feel like last year when I started getting involved with this George Floyd case and I started speaking out and I started attending protests and everything like that, it made me start realizing that these are things that have affected me too in the background. But me, my family, the generations before me, if I ever experienced those racial situations, which I have several of them, they would just tell me, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's just the way that it is. I dealt with it. Your grandmother dealt with it. Your great grandmother and grandfather dealt with this. And what you're feeling, they had more of those experiences than you because of the times they were in. So you just have to kind of deal with it. And just like with anything else, it sits with you if you're not able to talk about it and express yourself and share. And that's something that I really realized during this time.
Yeah. And you've spoken on the podcast where you've struggled with mental health, and like you said, it added, and I'm not saying that, you know, racism will add to it, but it over the years does add things, because even though we think, oh, we brush it off, it has an impact on us as we go.
Still there.
Do you see what I mean? Even though if your mental health came about from, your struggle with mental health might have came about from, let's just say it came about from losing a job. I don't know, whatever. Let's just say it came about, this, I'm not saying you, I'm saying, let's just say it came about from you losing a job and you lost your job and you just all of a sudden you're struggling with thinking, why, what happened? Why didn't I get it? But previous to that, growing up, you probably had racist bullying or this, that and the other, and you've overcome it, but that then still is a part of your experience growing up. And even if losing your job isn't part of that, it's still part of what made you. So in a sense, it should come to a point where we don't need, like anything, people shouldn't be bullied, some people shouldn't be called names, some people shouldn't be, you know, abused or whatever. And one of the things is obviously racism, which can take a nasty turn, like you said, in America.
Yeah.
In America, it does have a massive impact.
Right. So, I've only told this story once before, and I actually told it on another podcast. Yeah. And I was just thinking about it as you were talking about that. I grew up in Canada. I'm pretty sure that I mentioned that in the first podcast that we did together. Yeah. And for the most part, like 90% of the demographics of where I grew up was white. And for quite a few years, that wasn't really an issue for me because that's all I know as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, that's who I grew up around. There was not too many black people around. And I don't feel like I was treated differently or worse than anyone else at that time.
Yeah.
Until I had this situation in school where this white boy, he started calling me the N-word. And it was the first time I had even really heard that, you know. I might have heard it on TV or something, but it's the first time I ever heard somebody say that in person from this white guy. And he was telling me I'm a monkey. He was telling me about my lips and he was telling me the palms of my hands are the best part of my hands because they're white. And he was telling me all kinds of crazy things. And I didn't even know how to respond to that. I would just tell him, leave me alone, you know, like for a while. It's like, leave me alone. And one day he was just going at me all day, like from the time I got into the school until the time the school day ended. And he followed me when we were leaving the school, when school ended, and we're walking outside to go to the parking lot. And he just said the wrong thing one too many times, and I just lifted him up and put him against the wall. And I was like, don't ever say that to me again. I was like, I was furious. I was just so angry. I just snapped. After what was bullying. I didn't realize that was bullying at the time, because I felt like a bully, it has to be somebody who's hitting you or beating you up or something. So at that moment, a crowd gathered around us, and his mother had just pulled in to pick him up from school. And she saw that. Like, she didn't hear anything that happened, but she visually saw me holding him up. So we all go to the principal's office. They call my mom, and the kid makes up a story saying that for months I was physically threatening him. I'm gonna beat you up one of these days. Like, you know, he made up a whole story about different things that I supposedly said to him, which never happened. But because they visually saw me and didn't hear anything that I told them he said, they didn't side with me. They were like, you have to apologize to him, and you're getting suspended. And I just remember, like, when I was talking to my mom, I was just really distraught about this situation. And I was like, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. You know, like, somebody keeps saying that stuff to you, what are you supposed to do? Just walk away and let him continue? And she was just like, you know, I believe you. I don't think you're lying, but you just have to follow the protocols, you know, apologize and just eat that, basically. That's just the way it is. And that's something that still to this day hurts me to think about. Because in that type of situation, he was the aggressor. Yes, you can definitely say don't put your hands on anybody, but what I did was a reaction. I never had any kind of like a fight history with the school. I was never had any history of bullying anybody or anything like that. So I felt like the things that I was saying were very serious, and they should have taken them very seriously. And I said to them, like, well, what punishment does he get? And they were like, they told me, well, we've taken care of it behind the scenes. Like, we're not going to tell you, but we took care of it. So I said, well, what happens if he does it again? You know what they said? They said, we're making this box for you. Like, you know how they have suggestion boxes?
Yeah.
Where you can slide the paper in there? Yeah. So they made a box like that for me and said, whatever he says to you, write it down and put it in that box. And I did that because he continued after the fact. After I apologized to him and got suspended and everything, he was still saying the same things, and I was writing it down, putting it in the box. And at the time, I didn't realize what was happening, but in retrospect, I realized they were telling me that just to avoid any more incidents from me. It's like, he'll feel like if he's putting the things in this box, like, something is going to be done, so he's not going to take matters into his own hands. So yeah, that situation really, believe it or not, shaped, I think, some of my views on the justice system. Because obviously this is not the police, and this is not a criminal case or anything like that, but it's kind of a microcosm of one.
That's right. So you would, but what we're basically saying here is that, it's the same. It's injustice at even at that level. And and I was going to say to you before you even spoke about that bit, was imagine that then on the scale that we've got now, and then that leads to the thinking of what you were thinking is, oh, you know, what if it gets off? Because imagine that.
Yeah.
You're actually, you've had experience of it at that level, someone getting off. If you put it that way. He's got off a sentence. If you think, put it that way, if you look at it that deep, it's not even have to be deep. He's got off a sentence of being suspended from school or being whatever because you were seen to be physically holding him or whatever. But he didn't hit it, and then he carried on. And even though the evidence was produced, he still got off. And that's almost like saying, now, you grow up, and even now you're in America, wherever you may be, because this is happening around the world, they're getting, that person, you're almost afraid of this person getting off. It's down to your experiences, but also the experiences of what you've seen that's happening on a, you know, weekly or monthly basis, yearly basis, particularly like, say somewhere like where you live. Would you say that's like you say, it's a microcosmism? Would you say that's true?
Yeah, and I also have another experience that happened to me actually last year, and I think it was right before the pandemic. I was sitting down in my car. It was an empty street. Matter of fact, it wasn't before the pandemic. It was during the pandemic. And this is a time when over here we were in lockdown. There was not a lot of people outside on the street or anything.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my car. The car was off and parked. I wasn't even driving it. And I was on the phone. I was talking to my grandmother on the phone. And I saw this police car come by me, but I didn't think anything of the situation because I'm like, I'm not even moving or anything. Then he circles around, then comes back around. Then he turns his lights on. He starts flashing his lights. And I'm like looking around, like, I wonder who he's coming for. And he parks behind my car. And I'm sitting here like looking at this almost empty street. And I'm like, what is going on here? Is this some kind of crazy setup? I was instantly in fear. And he comes, knocks on my window, and asks me to step out of the car. So I got out. I gave him my license or whatever. And he was like, are you calm? And I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's like, yes. What do you mean? Am I calm? Because we got a report of a black African-American male that matches your description that was sitting in a gray Honda Civic across from the Bank of America that was in an altercation with a Caucasian woman and hit her. And I was like, here? Because nobody was even out on the street. There was one couple that was sitting outside eating. But the whole street was empty. We were in a lockdown situation. So what flashed through my head instantly was all these things that I've seen on TV and on Instagram, media, whatever, where people are like, you have no right to ask me these questions or to take my license or whatever.
Yeah.
This racial profiling, and then they end up in situations where they're dead. Because they wanted to state their rights. So because of that, I complied. You know, I gave him my license. I just told him repeatedly, like, I was sitting in my car. I didn't even leave my car. I don't know what you're referring to or who gave you that call, but it definitely wasn't me. And I haven't even seen or heard any incidents in this area since I've been sitting here. So he said, okay, I'm taking your license, get back in the car. I sat down in the car. He had me sitting in there like half an hour. And then he came back to the car and he gave me the license. And he was just like, well, we're going to keep your information on file if we need it for further investigation. And then he just drove off. And I was just angry. I'm like, did this guy even get a call? Or did somebody just see me outside and was like, he's too black to be in this neighborhood, so I'm gonna just make something up? And the white couple that was sitting there, they were within earshot of everything, and I couldn't let it go. I was so upset. I went over to them and I was like telling them what the officer said, and I said, did you see or hear any kind of an incident? They were sitting there eating dinner. It was like a restaurant over there with outdoor dining. And the couple actually said to me, it's clear what happened here. I would just tell you, you need to just let it go and leave. Because they were like, I'm sorry you experienced that, but it definitely looked like some kind of a case of racial profiling. And I was like, wow, I was really surprised that they just flat out said that.
Again, there's something you said there as well. And I'm going to kind of, because we talk about health and your mental health and the anger, because again, it leads then to anger. You said the word fear. Now, is this, I'm going to say this because the listeners out there, I mean, because I know the answer, but is this word a common thing with black people and dealing with police, fear?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, and I'm definitely not one of those people that just says all the cops are bad or all the police officers are bad. I know people who are current, formerly in the job, and you know, when I've had certain incidents that took place for me, I've called on the police when I needed them, and they helped. You know, they helped when I needed help. So it's not that all of them are bad. It's just that there has been so much corruption in the institution, especially when it comes to black men specifically, that those situations make you feel fearful right away. You don't feel like they're trying to protect and serve. And in that situation, I feel like if I had responded in a manner that they had deemed aggressively, a gun easily could have been drawn and I wouldn't be here talking about it. I even had a conversation with my mom like a few days ago where she was reiterating to me, if you ever find yourself in that type of a situation, like this recent one that happened with this teenager that tried to run, and he got shot, and they said it was a taser. They thought it was a taser, whatever. She said, if you ever find yourself in that situation, let them handcuff you, take you to jail, and fight the system. Because if you try to resist or anything like that, you're not going to be here to fight the system. And mothers with black sons are very concerned, even up till now. You know, like, I'm not a young kid, but obviously her saying that means that she's still very concerned about me out there.
Yeah. And bottom line is, you're still, to her, you're still her kid.
Yes.
No matter what age you'll be, you're still her child. And no mum wants, no parent, full stop, particularly mums or whatever, I'm not saying any advice, I'm saying no parent wants their child to pass before they do.
Right.
That's a big thing. They don't want their child to pass before they do. So it becomes more, that takes on an even more kind of profound thing now, because like you say, more and more young black men and women are being killed, and people are really struggling mentally. And you said, you mentioned fear, you mentioned what horrible or whatever. What to be fearful of this entity that is supposed to, like you said, it's not all of them, but you're fearful of this organization or entity that it doesn't. You don't know who's going to be getting out of the car. You don't know whether it's a good person or a bad person. But you, to live in America as a black person, particularly as a black man perspective, to live in fear of. It's not like I'm scared of a dog, or I'm scared of a needle, or I'm scared of the dentist. You're fearful of these people who are meant to protect you.
Yes. And that's very, very sad. It's very, very sad to have to feel that way.
Yeah. Like you said, looking at, you know, the drive past you, or the look in the car, or, you know, it must raise anxiety levels.
Yes. Like when I saw the lights flashing and I realized that this was for me, my life flashed before my eyes. It's not even an overstatement for me to say that, because it was dark outside. It was an empty block. Two people were on the block aside from me. I was the only car parked there at that moment. And it's just me and him, basically. And the way that he came at me, like as if I had done something already, and he was coming to de-escalate the situation, my heart was pumping. Like, am I gonna leave here? I'm really thinking this, and not everybody has experienced that fear. So I think people on the outside looking in might be like, they say things like, "Well, if you follow the law, then you're not going to have to deal with those types of things." I have always been a law-abiding citizen. I've never been to jail, prison, locked up or anything, but yet I've had multiple incidences with the police where I've been handled as if I did something.
Do you think that people who have just lost it in the moment, maybe want to do a shootout or do whatever it may be, do you think that they've got to a point, do you think for those people they've got to a point where they've said, they're gonna do this to me whether I'm a good person or not? Do you think some people have got to that point where they've said, in the past, it doesn't matter whether I'm good or bad, they're still going to lock me up, they're still going to do this, and they've kind of just said, you know what, stuff that.
And oh yeah, I definitely believe that that's the case for some people. It takes an emotional toll on you. And the other part of it is, a lot of times, I know that you've probably heard this, that people have said, well, you black people kill each other. And you know, you sell drugs to each other and gang life and all this stuff, and you're doing more to yourselves than anyone else can do to you. Well, the thing about that is there's a phrase that people say, like being a product of your environment. So a lot of these people grow up in these impoverished areas. A lot of these black people specifically grow up in these impoverished areas and hoods where they don't have like a, you know, clean, nice place to live. They don't know where their food is going to come from. And all they know is this gang life. That's the only thing that people succeed at in the environment that they're in. And then those people end up either dead or in jail. So, first of all, there's such a difference with poverty, with the distribution of wealth, especially in this country, in the United States. The top 10% of earners control 90% of the wealth. So, the majority of the country, I said company, because it is kind of like a company.
You're right.
the majority of the country is living either moderately or in poverty, and the majority of that is black and colored people. So yes, in those circumstances, they're going to commit more crimes. That's just naturally going to happen. But people pin that on their race more than those other factors.
Yeah.
And somebody like me, I didn't grow up in poverty. I didn't grow up rich either. You could probably say middle class, even like lower middle class. But I have felt like the invisible ceiling, where I'm like, no matter how good I do, there's still this barrier that's always going to be there for me that I can't really break through. But fortunately, I have not felt like this is going to make me snap and just do other things, because I've had like a solid family foundation where my parents made something of themselves, coming from Africa and coming from Guyana, and my grandparents in Trinidad and different places where they made it, you know, for them, which was getting here and becoming professionals and having a whole career.
And you, we've had the verdict. And what do you see now? For do you think that? I mean, obviously, I sent you that video, and it doesn't seem like much is going to change. Or do you feel that things are going to change? I mean, yes, it's one sentence, but is that going to change the narrative now? Or what would you like to see happen?
I think things are going to change. I'm optimistic. I've seen a lot of people saying, let's not celebrate, the work is not done. I understand where they're coming from, because it's been so many hundreds, thousands probably of cases like this, where even there was even footage that they showed and the police officer still got off. And, you know, we've been facing oppression for so long. I understand like how people are really hesitant to celebrate this situation. Something that I say is there's not a winner and a loser, because George Floyd is dead. So the family lost, the people lost, we all lost for having to witness something like that. But at the same time, it's a great first step, because now I'm sure other officers are looking at this and saying, like, I used to be able to not fear doing whatever I want to do with this job. Like, as soon as I put on this badge, I have some kind of immunity where if I do something that is clearly illegal, I can tie it under the guise of this was required or necessary for X, Y, and Z reason. And they're like, I don't want to be the next Chauvin that ends up losing my job and getting convicted, going to prison, and having all this stuff that he's had, the backlash and everything like that. It's a tremendous step in the right direction. And also with the Breonna Taylor case, because of the public outcry, I forget what the specific name of this law is called, the no-knock warrant, that's what it is. The no-knock warrant was removed from being legal in Kentucky. So things are changing. We're not going to see like a massive overhaul in a year or two, but things are definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's a good point you brought up there. It's the other side, isn't it? It's not the case of this side. It's the other side, is the changes within law enforcement. And where an officer will probably think twice, might think twice about pulling out the gun or you know, shooting somebody or whatever, because they know that, or doing something which they thought that was, oh, I have this power to do this, this, and this. Now I don't have that. I don't have the power now to keep, you know, maybe harassing people or whatever. So, like you say, it's a good point. Let's talk about how you've been before we kind of finish, because you've got a few minutes left. how have you been in the last, you know, away from that side thing? How have you been since the last podcast? What's been happening in your life? You know, you talk about the smoothie and things like that. What's been happening for you?
Well, life has been barely similar to what it was the last time we spoke, because, you know, we're still experiencing the pandemic and everything. One thing that did happen was that I traveled to North Carolina to visit some very close friends of mine.
Yeah.
And it was such a great change of pace from the way things are in New York. It was a lot more relaxed over there. And my friends also have like a big space, because there's a lot more open land down south in those types of areas. So it just felt like a great release and relief for me to temporarily leave these surroundings that are really tense.
And that's something else I picked up when I went to America, is that America has different climates, like say England, but the place is so big. I always speak about this, but this place is so big, it's almost like, I know Americans in the past, and some Americans say, you know, why would they leave America to go anywhere else, because they've got so many places to visit there that in some people's lifetime they don't actually see all the places. Like you said, you're able to go from New York to a place that's more rural, countryside, and more open space, more green, would you say that's helped you with to kind of get some sort of reality and kind of help with your mental health? Did it make you feel more happier?
Yeah, I was very happy during that time, because I dedicated my time towards just relaxation. I'm not going to think about work. I'm not going to think of anything I'm stressing over at home. I'm just going to enjoy this time, sit outside in the sun, relax, and take this as a mental vacation. So it was something that really refreshed and reset me and gave me some strength, some positive energy to keep moving forward. Now, one thing that I'm going to say too is that with the job that I do, which is, I mentioned it in the last podcast, but I'm going to mention it again in case somebody has not heard that one. Right now, for the past year, I've been reaching out telephonically to clients through the job and just talking to them about their different issues. And people have a lot of things going on, especially now during the pandemic.
Yeah.
They're talking about people who have died, their mothers, their father, their sibling. They're talking about how they've lost their job. They don't have an income. They're depressed. I'm talking to people who are on substances, cocaine, meth, you know, they're trying to get off of these things and having a hard time. And they're in the house all the time now with no job. So they're depressed. I'm talking about like family issues, all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
Anything that you could think of, I'm talking to these people about these things 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. And no matter who you are, you're still human. So you have to put on this face to do the job.
Yeah.
But once you get off the clock, that all of that takes away some from your personal mental health. So it becomes really important for me in my off hours to kind of disconnect from those things. That's the reason why I said to you earlier that I wasn't following the case too closely. Because imagine if I spent a whole 8 hours talking to all these different people about these different things and flip on the news right after and watch this guy's knee on his neck and all these different testimonies, and then go into the next day already feeling drained emotionally, and then trying to like boost myself up enough to talk to all these people, and it keeps going. It can become like a vicious cycle. And it's something that actually happened to me when I first started doing this work, because that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was depleting the emotional energy at work, and then depleting it some more after work, and then going into the next day and going into the next day. And I ended up quitting the job because one day it was so rough for me that I just went outside of my car in the middle of the workday. I was like, I asked my supervisor, I just need to get some air. And I sat down in the car, I put my head on the steering wheel, and I was just like, I can't go back in there. It's too overwhelming, and I don't have the energy for it, the emotional energy for it. And I did go back in, but I didn't see another patient. I told them, like, I'm not feeling good today, and I just completed up my notes, and that was that. I didn't go back. And I had to come to a point, and a therapist helped me with this, where she was like, you number one, you can't take your work home. And number two, you have to do things, self-care. You have to do a lot of self-care in your free time. And that could mean declining that call from that friend who you know is going to call you and they have all these complaints to give you. Or it could mean just, I'm shutting myself off for an hour to meditate. Or it could mean, you know, I'm plugging in my gym time, whatever it is.
And that's a good point that you made. For listeners out there, if you are doing jobs that, you know, whether it be a nurse, anything to do with the healthcare system, the healthcare of others, the welfare of others, even if it's some family member, you're looking after a family member, sometimes it's good to just switch off for a few hours. And like you say, you take up music, which is the name of your podcast. You take up music, don't you?
Music and mental health, yes.
Yes, you take up, you're big into music. So your coping thing is to help you is to gym, music, and things like that. What would you say to...
What would you say
to anybody before we leave? What would you say to anybody that... that, first of all, in fact, where can you be found? If anybody wants to kind of tap into your resources, or if anybody wants to hear a bit more about you, what you do?
Well, you can add me on my Instagram page, which is Music and Mental Health. No dashes or no underscores or anything like that. Just Music and Mental Health. And within that page, I actually started up a YouTube page recently that I would love for people to follow. And I have that link in my Instagram bio.
Thank you. Because we can talk about that another thing, but I think you're doing a brilliant job, because like you're saying, it's good that you have managed to and people will be thanking you, actually. People will be thankful that you've managed to get your job back again and be back up and running. I will say one thing for you about the berries. They say, or you were making an apology about not buying fresh berries, but they say frozen fruit is better than the actual fresh ones, because quite often the ones that we say are fresh aren't actually that fresh. When they make the berries, what they do is they come straight off the thing and straight into the bag, and they bag them up and they freeze them straight away. So quite often the berries and things like that, frozen fruit is actually better for you because it keeps the nutrients in, because it go to freezer straight away. So I just thought I'd let you know that. Obviously, if you've got berries that they've got added sugar on it and all that sort of stuff, that isn't. But when you've got the berries, frozen berries or frozen fruit, and it goes straight in the bag, what happens is it locks the nutrients in. They say it locks nutrients in before it can get out. And so by freezing them. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that's another point.
I did have one other thing I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I do mental health counseling, but I have learned, especially from talking to different people, that what I do exists in many platforms. It can exist with you as an educator. It can exist with a personal trainer, a nutritionist. What I mean by that is, there are some jobs where people just come in and go out. When I say people, I mean like the customers, the clients, or whatever. They just kind of come in and get a product or something, and they come out. But there's a lot of jobs where it involves talking and connecting with people.
Yeah.
Like, you could be going into the hair salon, like a female could be going into a hair salon and they're sitting there getting their hair done, and it takes 2 hours, 3 hours to do their hair. And during that time, what are they going to be doing? They're talking with each other. You know, I had this and this problem at home. I'm struggling with this. This is difficult for me. I'm having a hard time with this and this and that. So we label things as counseling, but really, a lot of times it's just connecting and sharing with each other. The only difference with a counselor is, like, a counselor has a professional opinion on whatever they're saying. But somebody who's not a counselor might be getting a lot of those same things that the counselor hears too. And you're not really thinking of that because, like, you're just doing the hair. So you're not thinking that you're being emotionally drained as well while you're doing the job, but you are. You know, like, anytime somebody shares something with you, it takes some kind of emotional energy from you to be able to listen, empathize, and give them advice. That's just the way that it is, because you have to take on somewhat of that problem. You have to hear them, you have to feel what they're saying, and you have to be able to give them something to take with them.
Yeah.
So this, what I'm saying, really applies to everyone. You know, that you have to take that time for yourself and fill yourself up during those off times when you're not having to work and do things like that, with things that are calming for you, with things that are positive, and with things that will fill your cup for you to be able to handle when it's tipped over all day. Otherwise, those are the things that lead us into breakdowns. When our cup is empty for multiple days in a row, and you're not filling it, but you're still pouring it.
Yeah, definitely. And I wasn't gonna end on it, but you've kind of there said everything in a nutshell, and you've actually said the final word. Thank you for that. I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show again. I think we've definitely got more to talk about. I mean, like, this could be an ongoing series. And it's been fantastic talking to you about, you know, what's happening today and what's happening, you know, what's been happening in the past. And it's just about holding our heads up, and hopefully things will change.
Absolutely.
And that was Men Are Nuts. Speak to you soon.